Hi, my name is Sebastian. I'm an alcoholic. Steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. The end.
Thanks for sharing.
Thanks for letting me share. On reflecting about the fourth step, I always thought humility was, no, I'm not great. No, I'm not great. No, I'm just an alcoholic. You know what? I'm a great human being who's got a lot of stuff wrong with her, and that doesn't make me a bad person. That's humility for me right now. It'll probably change in 6 months. Who knows? But the fifth step, off of the fifth step, I get my pattern. My patterns of behavior caused by motives, motives caused by character defects caused by whatever crap happened to you when you were four. It's the truth. I mean, if you think about it. Wrong behavior. What do I do when I feel this way? My motive. Man, let me tell you something. You can tell me you're doing the right thing all you want, and you may be shiny as a brand new penny, but you got crappy motives, you're never going to feel good. And that's my biggest character defect. I can come off like I'm a shiny penny, man, but behind the scenes I'm scheming and I'm plotting and I'm going to get you. And you know what? I'm the one who doesn't get to be free. Nobody else gets hurt but me. And that's no fun. I get my amends off of my fourth step. You pretty much can guarantee that if you resent somebody, it's your own fault. Or as my sponsor would say, it's a result of your drinking. And you owe them an amends. Yeah, you're wrong. Pretty much, if you resent somebody, you're wrong. If you resent somebody, you're wrong. If that's not motivation to not resent people, I don't know what is. Because if I'm wrong means amends, and that's just so... It's amends, you know? Amends means to change, and change to an alcoholic is the most horrifying thing we could do. The other things we get from our fifth step, which is essentially our fourth step, is the next right thing to do. What should I do instead? And our seventh step list, which is all of our character defects that we're going to ask God to take away from us. Which brings us to step six and seven. Now, I break six and seven into two groups. There's six and seven, the act of, and what did I call the other one? Oh, I lost my card. Oh, that sucks. Okay, so six and seven, the act of, and six and seven, the process of. Six and seven is an into action for a reason. They could have made another chapter for it, but they didn't. They put it into action. Into action. The act of six and seven is taking an hour alone in meditation with God and my fourth step, asking myself some questions. Have I missed anything? God, is there anything that I didn't... Is there anything that my alcoholism kept me from putting on my fourth step? Usually there isn't. If I've done a thorough fourth step and I've allowed my sponsor in deep enough to call me out on my crap, everything's on there. I may not want to look at a couple of pages of it, but it's on there. Am I really, really ready to be raw? In the seventh step, we ask God to remove all the defects of character which stand in our way of our usefulness to Him. I'm so impressed with myself. I just said that. I think great. Which, for a pretty big fourth step, which definitely the first one, sometimes the second one, sometimes the third and fourth one, we're asking God to take away quite a few difficulties of character, and which leaves us raw. You have no defense mechanism. You're going out there from here to do God's will with no defense mechanisms. Alcoholic or not, that's scary. Do I really have a firm hold on the third step? Do I really have a conscious contact with my higher power? And am I really willing to do His bidding? Really, for real. And that's why we take a whole hour to sit with it and to ask God to get involved and to tell Him, well, I tell Him, I am so scared to walk out of here and not be judgmental. That may not be one of the character defects you choose to take from me, but that's definitely one of the ones that I'm going to miss, because that keeps you all in a box and keeps me safe. So, and am I really willing to do God's will? That's another question. That's the last question I ask. Am I really willing to do God's will? Because if I do God's will, that means I really have to make my life none of my business. It means that whatever God puts in front of me is what I do. Not what's off to the left, not what's off to the right, Not, you know, my best friend's moving to D.C. for the summer. Oh, my God, I'm going to quit my job and go with her, which did cross my mind. Am I really willing to do God's will? I will tell you this, sitting here tonight doing God's will, going to Florida on Sunday to face two aunts that I really don't have a whole lot of respect for, and a grandmother who I owe a hefty amends. I know, because when I was sitting at the kitchen table and my mom was telling me what was going on with my mother, she said something. She said, "What is it gotta be like to be 82 years old and be alone and not have anybody to talk to about your feelings?" And I was like, I gotta go to Florida. I have to go to Florida. It hit me, just like my spiritual awakening when I got sober. It's like, okay, I'm not in the right place and I have to go there now. I mean, and I was literally so charged that I was literally ready to leave her house, drive to the airport, and call my husband from Florida and go, "Hi, honey. I'm not going to be there when you get home." So it's like, am I really willing to do God's will? Because you know what? I don't really want to go to Florida. I'm scared. I'm scared of being vulnerable and emotional in front of my grandmother, which I have no choice. I know I'm going to be that way because I have to be who I am today. And I also have issues wrapped around it. You know, I talked to my grandfather when I was 13, and we were supposed to go visit him a month later, and a week after we talked to him, he took his own life. And I never got to say goodbye. And I think some of that is wrapped into this. In fact, I'm sure it is. So that kind of sucks. But I'd rather go down to Florida and do what I gotta do than walk around with the pain that I walk around with because of my grandfather. I don't blame him. He's still around. He made sure that I was safe. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't judge my grandfather for what he did. He had God's will, and he did God's will. And I believe you can't take your own life on your own. It's not yours to take. So obviously it was time to go. But I think that I need to go down there and do what I got to do to right it. And that, for me, is I feel like I'm doing God's will. It feels like the next right thing to do, and I'm going to go do it. And the seventh step is a prayer. We get down on our knees with our sponsor in her living room, feeling like an idiot. I can't believe I'm praying in front of my sponsor. And we recite the seven-step prayer. And that's it. That's six and seven. The act of. The process of is a totally different situation. It sucks to no end. All right, the six and seven steps, the process, I have this whole analogy. I ran it by some friends of mine. They say it makes sense. I hope that I do it right tonight. On the fifth step, we've got this character defect. It's a pink flashlight. That's what we're going to call it for the analogy. It's a pink flashlight. I take this pink flashlight, my character defect, and when people challenge me or start to expose me or start to bother me in any way, I take this flashlight, shine it in their face. And it scares them away. And it works. Six and seven, the act of, God takes it away from me. I have no more flashlight. So what does my addiction do? My alcoholism gets this little, tiny, black thing. I don't know what it is. It's kind of just sitting over here. I don't use it. It just kind of sits over here. And then somebody bothers me. And I pick it up. And it's a little red beam of light. You know those really annoying red lights that people do in the movie theater, like at the best part, and they put it like right on their forehead? And I take that and very, very subtly off to the side start shining it in your eyes. And you really don't know where it's coming from, but you go away. That's the sixth and seventh step. That's the sixth step. The sixth step is noticing that it's me shining that flashlight in your face. It's a smaller flashlight. It's not as noticeable. It doesn't hurt as much as the big, bright, white one, but it's still a flashlight. It's still in my hand, and I'm still using it to defend myself from you. Go away. Wee! Go away. Wee! You're bothering me. I'm scared of you. That's a big one. Fear-motivated person. You're scaring me. Wee! So now I see that I'm doing this. I've been doing it for the last 6 months. I thought somebody was standing behind me with a little red flashlight. Apparently not. It was me. So now I feel like What is it, the cat who ate the canary with the feathers coming out of the mouth? That's what I feel like. I know it's me. I'm standing here, and I got this flashlight, and who's standing next to me this time? My father. And she looks at me, and she's like, what was that? Nothing. I'm just going to put that in my back pocket. Don't think I'll use it anymore. Won't be doing that anymore. Next week, the meeting, somebody bothers me, scares me, hurts me. Take the flashlight out. Sponsor's not looking. You know, I know I wasn't supposed to do it, but it really was bothering me, and they were really scaring me, and it's just this once, and I'm not going to do it again. I'm going to put it in my back pocket. And the next week, I come to the meeting. I know I have the flashlight in my back pocket because I put it there before I left the house. I don't want to use it. I know that God has a path for me, and he doesn't put anything in my path that's not supposed to be there. Nothing happens in God's world by mistake. My life is none of my business. But if you bother me, at least I have it. And sure enough, you bother me, as you always do. So I take my flashlight out, and I know I'm not supposed to be doing this, but I'm going to do it anyway. God, this is the wrong thing to do. Now I know I've done something wrong. I know I got this flashlight in my pocket, and I know it looks different than the other ones, but it's serving the same purpose. It's keeping me from doing God's will. Now, I don't like not doing God's will. It's very apparent to me that this person that is bothering me needs to be in my life because they won't go away. And I know you're going to come back next week, and I know that if you come back next week, I'm bringing my big flashlight. No more little flashlight that doesn't hurt anybody. Next week, I'm bringing out the big guns, and I'm going to blind you. And you'll never see again. Then you won't find me. Now, I know this is the wrong thing to do, and I'm obviously in pain about this. For me to take somebody's sight away from them, that can't be a good thing. It's just this poor person sitting in a meeting, trying to tell me something that God wants me to know, and I'm going to blind them next week for it. I've obviously got a resentment for it. Guess what? Time to go back to my fourth step. So I go back to my fourth step, and I look, and I'm like, all right, little black flashlight, do I see anything on here? No, little black flashlight's not on here. Is any flashlights on here? Oh, yes. There's the flashlight. Looks different. It's a different color light, and look what it goes back to. It goes back to my fear of confrontation. Right back to a core defect of mine. Character defects are manipulative. They're more manipulative than I am, and that's scary. So I'm looking at this flashlight, and I'm going, you know, this little flashlight, it doesn't cause that much pain, but it's obviously getting in the way. And man, you know, I talked to my sponsor, and now she knows that next week I'm going to bring the big flashlight because I ratted myself out because I'd rather be free. Doesn't mean it's easy. Doesn't mean that flashlight's not sitting on my dresser and I'm getting ready for the meeting and I'm looking at that flashlight going, God, I can't do that. I don't want to do that. But I have no choice but to put that flashlight in my bag and to blind that guy at the meeting tonight. Save me. Help me do what I can't do by myself. And I lift my head up and he takes the flashlight away. But he does leave this little red, you know, one of those things you push so you can see where you put your car key? It's there, man. I'm not going to use it tonight, but that's how the 6 and 7 stuff goes for me. Man, I got character defects coming out the wazoo, and they don't look anything anymore. With 10 years sober, they don't look anything to you like the ones I came in with. I mean, when I first got sober, you couldn't look at me for more than 4 seconds without me going, what? What? Stop looking at me. And you know, when you're doing a speaking commitment, that's not good. But I know because I got my fourth step. I have a sponsor that knows me. I got a husband that knows me. I got a support group around me that is willing to let God work through them to show me what I can and cannot get away with here in this world. And do I listen to them? No. Why would I do that? I wait until I'm good and sad, good and angry, got the big flashlight ready to go. And then I ask God to get involved. And man, let me tell you, God's given me more chances. Every single movie about angels, the angels are so pissed off that God has infinite patience with us. I'm thinking I'd be dead by now if I was an angel. Because I just keep making the same mistakes over and over. Same character defects keep coming back more and more and manipulative. And you know what? It's really not less hurtful. It just stings in a different way. And I don't want to be like that. I like the people I have in my life. I don't want them to leave. And I know that I'm going to be the one responsible if they do. So I got to do everything that I can do to make myself as healthy as I can. And you know what's really funny else that I wanted to bring up about the seventh step? It's my seven-step loophole. Yes, I still have them. The seventh step says, and I brought it up here because I really do suck at remembering things. Ah, yes, here's where it says, which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. It's a loophole. Now, to be completely honest with you, when I have a character defect that's blaring me in the face, I usually call somebody. Not always, but most of the time I do call somebody because I don't want to be sick. And I know if I let those character defects get too big, I'm gone. I don't have, what do they call it, the threshold for pain that I used to have? I don't have it. I get hurt really easily. And you know what? My character defects seem to be the ones that are hurting me. But it does say, and this, you know, basically what the loophole is really to tell people don't beat yourself up if you're not perfect. Because you know what? Somebody's got to be judgmental. And nobody's perfect. If you were perfect, you'd be dead. You'd be God. So I'm actually kind of glad in an honest way that it says it stands in my way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. And I have to be honest and tell you that last week my sponsee who comes here yelled at me for not calling her back. Forgot to tell you, Cass, sorry. Because I have character defects. I just assume hide away from the world. And if you really don't sound like it's that urgent, I'm going to hide from you and not call you back. And all I could say to her was, you're absolutely right, I am sorry, and I am working on it. This is why there is a process of 6 and 7. I'm asking God to get involved. I ask God, God, help me pick up that phone. Help me call them back. Help me call my sponsor. Help me get to meetings. Help me go to work on time. He just refuses to help with that. I don't know why. You know, I show up at work. I'm like, that was definitely the grace of God, not me. I was going to be, it's really funny. I planned to be at work today at 8, thinking if I could work 8, I'm supposed to work 9 to 5, but he's real cool about the schedule. I'll get there at 8, I'll get off at 4, I'll have an extra hour to, like, you know, write out what I can't say and, you know, think about this meeting and, you know, get myself all sorts of scared. I didn't wake up till 8:20. And that's just how it goes. I don't know how to put this in words, so I'm just going to really, really try. And actually, I'm just going to read it off the card and see where it goes, because this is just coming to me within the last week. It's not what makes us resentful that we are our sponsor's C. It's the behavior that results that is first noticed. This is why I hold on to my fourth step. It's not the actual, like I was saying before, I guess I already went over this. It's not the, my fear of confrontation that came up. It was the behavior that comes from. It's like on the fear inventory. What do I do when I feel this? That's the first thing we see. What do I do when confronted? Usually run, or it's fight or flight with me, and man, I'm good at both. It's the behavior that comes out. If I can start to connect my behavior and understand where it comes from, over time it becomes easier for me to process these steps on a daily basis, because as soon as my voice gets loud, I know what it is. My husband was telling me that he carries a list of fears, and that every time a character defect would come up, he would bring it right back to the list. Man, how smart is that? And how come I never did that? Yeah, well, you know, He's got to be better at some stuff. But that's really the goal, isn't it? I need to start to get to learn myself on a new level. And you know, as soon as you get to learn yourself on that level and you think you know yourself all well, you call your sponsor and she goes, it's time to move to the next level. And you get to re-get to know yourself all over again. So looking at steps 6 and 7, and I don't know, I think I probably spent more time on 6 and 7 than anything else, but 6 and 7 are my favorite steps. There is this woman that I hold up here. She's part Mrs. D, and she's part Cass, and she's part Jeannie, and she's part Pat, and she's part the other Pat, and part the other Pat, and she's part Meg, and she's, you know, she's part Anne-Marie, and she's part Steph, and she's part my mom, and she's part my dad, and, you know, she's all these different parts of all these different people, and when step 6 and 7 come, and I am without a defense, I look to that woman and say, what would she do? And I get to create the person I am. I get to become the person I want to be. And that's the most incredible part of this program. I am who I want to be. Instead of being victimized or put in a box or told or stupid or a whore or uneducated or all those other things I thought I was, I get to be who I want to be. Man, I have always wanted to react like Mrs. D did when I walked into that meeting and I was like dressed in sweats for the Sunday speaker meeting. And I always wanted to react like her. And, you know, I always wanted to react like Terry when I came into the Saturday night Sparta meeting and I was all alone and she instantaneously knew that I was scared and called me over to sit with her. I want that opportunity. I want to be like that. I want to be organized. You know what I mean? I want to be giving, and I want to have that grace and dignity that I see in the women that I surround myself with. And so, you know what? I'm going to do it. And step 6 and 7 is the only opportunity in these steps where you get to do that. I get to recreate who I am, and I get to make a choice this time. Alcohol will not dictate my life. I will not drink today. I'm not giving up all that work. I'm about halfway there. I got this perfect woman up there. I'm halfway there. I've got those characteristics. I'm walking with my head held high. I have a successful life. I'm in school full time. I'm going to do what I've always wanted to do since I was 6 for a profession, and I'm going to be good at it someday. Someday. So now I'm this different person. And I have all these people that I hurt. And I got this list off of my 4-step. It's my 8-step list. Ah, yes, the 8-step list. We try to avoid it. I believe in formal amends. I believe that the greatest thing that I've ever heard from the big book, I really believe this is probably my favorite part that my sponsor gave to me, was the 3 questions that we ask at the end of the 9th step. I have to get over my alcoholism. I've been, this is what I did. I need to make amends in order to stay sober. This is what I have done. This is how I've harmed the relationship, blah, 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 you know, putting all that vulnerable stuff out there, looking like a jerk. And then I ask, is there any other way that I've harmed you that I'm not aware of? Because I don't know about you, man. As soon as I walk away, I crawl in my head and I'm like, oh my God, is there anything? Was I in a blackout? Do I not remember something? Did I do something? And I don't think it was that big of a deal, and they do. And are they going to hate me? And, you know, what if I didn't say what they wanted me to say? And I know it's none of my business what other people think of me, whatever. But, you know, I'm walking away and feeling all insecure. Man, I put this question out there. You got your opportunity. Take it. You don't take that opportunity, as far as I'm concerned, that's on you. I'm now giving you the opportunity. So we've got the, you know, is there any other way? How do I set these matters straight? I don't remember the 3rd question now. I don't remember what it was. But how do I set these matters straight? I'm coming to you. And I'm saying, this is what I have done. Is there anything else I've done that I was in a blackout for? And how do I set these matters straight? I've had some pretty amazing comebacks. I've righted relationships. I've gone through having a restraining order against me from my father to him throwing me the wedding of my dreams, buying a house where he now lives with 3 extra bedrooms in case I need a place to go, giving me his car so that I can get to school. Yeah, I know it all sounds like they're material things. It's the way my dad shows me that he loves me. But man, that man loves me. Like, it's amazing how much he loves me. Because I decided to do the right thing. And you know what? My father's amends was never for actions. And I remember this. He was the one amends on my 9th step where I had to make amends for him for my motives. I moved in with him to take care of him for a couple months, but it was, you know, a good action, but it was because I didn't think he could take care of himself. That's not a good motive. It wasn't to help him. It was to make me feel better. And that's not the right thing to do. But I don't want to sound egotistical, but it's like he worships the ground I walk on. I got to be careful what I ask him for, because he will not tell me no. Now, I don't know what the term daddy's little girl is supposed to mean, but I know what daddy's big girl means. And that's exactly what I am. You know, he told me, this is really amazing. He stopped me for no reason in the middle of the living room. We're all like milling around doing nothing at his house, which is what we all do when we go there. He stops me in the middle of the living room and he says, I ever told you how proud I am of you? Do you know that like my mouth dropped to the floor? My brother's mouth dropped to the floor? It's like, what? No. You haven't. And I told him, I said, actually, I was so dumbfounded that I said, no, you haven't. And he says, well, I am. He says, you're independent. He says, and you're making it. And of course, you know, my lack of self-esteem says, well, Dan did a lot of it. You know, he supports me. But these are amazing things that come from the 9th step. Like, just from making amends to people, I have a closer relationship with all of my family. And family has become so incredibly important to me. Now, when I first got sober, I used to say, hi, family, my name is Beth, and I'm an alcoholic, because I didn't have a family. And now I have a working relationship. In fact, I'm so proud of myself, I went and babysat my mother after she had little shoulder surgery, spurs or whatever it was, and I took care of her, and I made her lunch, and I washed the dishes, and we had a good time. Like, this coming from a woman who, like, you know, just kicked me out of her house. And she told me, she says, as I was leaving, she says, you know, you're beautiful. And I said, thanks. And the amazing part about that is that, one, I don't need her to tell me I'm beautiful. 2, this is amazing. I had to share it with my sponsor last time I talked to her. 2, I didn't throw it in her face that she never told me that when I was a kid. And it was all right. I got in the car, and I said, wait, something's missing here. I'm not feeling a resentment. Where'd it go? I'm, like, looking for it, and then I'm like, wow, I really do love her. I accept her as she is. Like, what an amazing thing. Like, my mom's so cool now. I probably won't move in with her, but, you know, I bet everybody else said that about their mother, too, so I don't feel bad. But anyway, I'm totally out of time. I can't believe I babbled on for an entire hour. I'm really grateful I shared. I really feel like I shared from my heart tonight. And normally I wouldn't ask this, but if maybe tonight in the prayer we could say an extra prayer for my grandmother, I would really appreciate that. Thanks for letting me share.